Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:49 British Summer Time. Today is September 11th, and today being Friday, of course, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it has been a rather momentous week in a number of senses. Looking on the equity front, a number of stock markets broke upwards to new recovery highs this week, incremental as they may be. That's still an impressive performance and reaffirms the uptrends that have been in play now since March of this year for the majority of indices and somewhat longer for the laggards. And among those markets breaking to new recovery highs this week are a number in Europe, but also the Dow Jones, S&P, the Nasdaq 100, and in Asia, we had India, Indonesia, I think Malaysia as well. So we continue to see that this a trade that is pushing money into stock markets is very much still in on form, and we have a progression of higher lows in the majority of cases to monitor in terms of the consistency of these advances, and until those higher lows are taken out, we can continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt. This was also an interesting week for the precious metal sector because we saw gold pushing up through $1,000. It pulled back subsequently in the middle of the week, but then pushed back up again in here today, up $10 on the spot at 1,006. So closing out the week over $1,000, and that's really quite an impressive performance. Silver has held on to the majority of its very impressive gain over the last 2 weeks into the end of this week, and is finishing out the week close to its highs. The high today was in the region of $17, and silver's closing out the week close to 1680. And platinum, which has been ranging for much of the last 3 months below $1,300, broke upwards in here today, up $32 on the day. This is a rather emphatic breakout, and completes this rather long consolidation, and really we can continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt there as well, as platinum and particularly platinum and silver are playing catch up with gold, which remains relatively overvalued relative to those other precious metals. And the same can be said for the gold shares sector, which has been one of the better performing sectors of any stock market sector over the last year, but has also pushed upwards to new high ground this week. And while it has been a bit more volatile than silver or platinum, there is still significant room for the shares to outperform if gold can hold above this $1,000 level, which looks really quite likely. And gold really would need to take out the area around $950 to really question potential for the expectations that so many people have for the market to be realized over the coming months. This was also a rather interesting week in government bonds. On the short end of the curve, we continue to see that yields on the 2-year in the US, Japan, Europe, and the UK are all pushing onwards to new lows, or really pressuring the lower side of their ranges. On the longer side of the curve, the 30-year yesterday had a big move on the US and held above the 120 level in here again today. With the money that's pushing into risk assets and the longevity of the stock market advance we've had over the last few weeks, particularly, or sorry, the last few months in terms of the longevity and the powerful move that we've had in the last few weeks, we are starting to see some of that money beginning to be taken off the table and moving into what could be termed safe haven type assets. And that is at least part of the reason that we're also seeing this move into the precious metals. Precious metals, of course, have a number of other bullish factors, but certainly gold's performance in following the credit crisis is certainly something that a number of investors will have taken note of, and there is strong potential for gold to perform in an inflationary or deflationary type of environment. In the rest of the commodity sector, we see that The industrial metals have been really quite firm all the way through to the middle of this week, but they came under some selling pressure yesterday, particularly with lead pulling down very sharply. And lead, of course, had been by far the most consistent. It had this wonderful progression of ranges, relatively similar sized ranges, one above another. It accelerated over the last couple of weeks and it came down with a bang yesterday, which really probably caps the advance in at least the short term and likely signals that we're moving into a corrective type phase, which is probably going to be characterized by a good deal of ranging. Some of the other industrial metals have also pulled back a bit more sharply in here. Nickel was among those, as was aluminium. Copper has held on to the majority of its gain and remains below this $3 level. Was a little bit weaker in here today, but not by any substantial amount. And we can continue to expect that this thing will continue to range as long as these progression of higher lows remain in place. What we have noticed over the last number of years is that industrial metals are quite unreliable at maintaining their upward breaks, and the hallmark of their advances all the way through to their peaks last year was the progression of higher lows. And as long as they remain in place, we can continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt. There has also been a mixed bag in the rest of the commodity complex. The grains have been weak over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and they're testing the lower side of their ranges. Orange juice, which had soared upwards with Arabica coffee and sugar on the heavy rains that were in the growing area of Brazil, has come back sharply, but appears to be potentially finding support here. Sugar, which has had an enormous run upwards, has consolidated and continues to do so. It was a bit weaker in here today. It was a bit stronger yesterday, but it would need to break down from this little range to say that with any degree of confidence that it has hit a medium-term peak. And in the rest of the soft commodities, you see that cocoa is pushing upwards once more in here and is looking quite firm. We are approaching, I think, in the Ivory Coast an important election, and there was violence surrounding that and in the growing areas, in the cocoa growing areas last time round. So that may be a factor in the strength in the cocoa prices. But what we can see over taking the market as a whole is that risk assets are performing in this environment, that central bankers have been falling over themselves in the last few weeks, particularly to say that regardless of the fact that the global economy is recovering and that recessions appear to be ending in some of the worst affected economies by the credit crisis, we see that these people are coming out and saying that they are going to leave the stimulus in their respective economies for as long as is needed to make sure that growth gains traction. And we have Jean-Claude Trichet in the Financial Times today talking about being vigilant about inflation. But that really will be a test of their mettle, whether they will actually remove the stimulus from the European economy swiftly if inflationary fears do start to rise. And of course, we know that the ECB's only mandate is to control inflation, but they will be under significant political pressure to keep the stimulus in the European economy for as long as is needed. And certainly, we're seeing the same type of statements being released by central bankers all over the world. This has been a crisis which has been met by an unprecedented level of cooperation across the world from central bankers and politicians. And they are going to want to continue to have a measured approach to how any one economy is dealing with the aftermath of this crisis. So we are unlikely to see that any one economy is going to remove its stimulus too quickly because it would put that country under too much of a competitive burden relative to the rest of the world. What we have noticed, particularly over the last 6 months, is that there is a sharp divergence. There is a complete two-tier environment in the stock markets where we see that commodity-producing Latin America and emerging Asia are leading in no uncertain terms, both in terms of stock market performance and the strength of their currencies. And the rest of the commodity-producing world fits very nicely into that same category. And the major players in the OECD, such as the Eurozone or the UK and the USA and Japan, are having much more trouble. They've relatively been much more impacted by the credit crisis. Their responses have had to be that bit more aggressive, and most of these economies didn't have the money with which to pay for these stimulus packages in the first place. So the supply of bonds is expanding dramatically and will continue to do so over the coming years as we continue to see that the countries worst affected by the credit crisis have got to go to the bond market to borrow the money to make up the deficits because they are all running heavy deficits. And that is going to have long-term consequences. It probably means that we're going to have lower growth, we're going to have lower employment, and there's going to be less cash around for consumers to spend. And the challenge for Asia in particular is to stimulate their consumer economies to pick up the slack in demand for consumer goods if they're going to continue to maintain the type of growth that they've been able to sustain for much of the last decade. And certainly we're seeing that there are major efforts underway to make sure that that happens. When we're looking at longer term investments, that two-tier stock market performance, the two-tier perform or d difference in the relative health of economies, and of course you have the demographic differences that you have between the East and the West. And we've often spoken of the enterprising East and an increasingly moribund West, where the last 10 years has seen the greatest urbanization in history, which is likely to continue for at least the next decade and possibly 2 decades. If we look to the major population centers of the world, China has been urbanizing for decades. There are still hundreds of millions of farmers ready to move to the cities, new cities, over the coming decades. But they are well ahead of the game compared to countries such as India with a similar population, but a much larger agrarian base. And they're only getting out of the blocks in terms of putting the infrastructure in place to meet the challenges that there are of creating, well, in the first place, educating these massive young populations, creating jobs for them, then building homes and providing them with clean water, infrastructure, sewage, power. And these all need to be built. You simply can't give the promise of a Western type consumer economy to a huge swathe of young people and then not deliver. And that is the risk that politicians face, that if they are unable to deliver the type of infrastructure and opportunities that these masses of young people are expecting, then they're probably not going to be in power for very long. Democracy and they could easily get kicked out by democratic methods or otherwise. So if politicians are good at anything, it's preserving their own welfare, and we can continue to expect that the types of policies that have already been put in place to put the infrastructure down to cater for these young populations will continue. It just makes no sense whatsoever to deviate from that type of pattern, and they have the well-trodden path to prosperity, made by the Asian tigers a couple of decades ago, and indeed Japan, to be able to learn from. And China and India are going to be major players, both in terms of their economies and politically, in the coming decades. And China is already well on the road to exerting its influence. China went into the credit crisis with a vast pile of cash, and it has been employing that with greater acumen over the last year, particularly looking at the relative attractiveness of the treasury market. And of course, they hold one of the largest positions, if not the largest position, of US treasuries. But also looking around the world at the bargains that were out there, and they've been bidding aggressively for resources type of investments, and they've been increasing their gold holdings. They've basically been putting their money into physical assets, which will help to fuel their economic growth going forward. And that's a very smart thing to be able to do, and they're taking good advantage of their cash-rich position in a practically zero liquidity type environment. But it is also a signal of the ambitions that the Chinese have towards the relative size of the economic clout that they want to be able to command in the coming decades. We've already seen that in the current 5-year plan that one of the main objectives was to move up the value chain in terms of their production capacity. And we see that the continuing policy that they are trying to close down the less efficient, smaller type factories and concentrate on higher value type goods, and we will see Chinese cars on the roads in the West in less than a decade, and they're moving aggressively into the electric car scene. And we are beginning to see global champion type companies from China moving on to the global stage. And that was something that was one of the arguments that was made against the Chinese model, was that it was unable to foster the entrepreneur, that the way that communism works acted against private enterprise being able to prosper in that environment. But what we are seeing is the hybrid authoritarianism that China is currently espousing is helping to put some of these companies into a competitive position relative to large global companies in the West. And that is the beginning of a trend which is likely to gain pace in the coming years. When we saw companies in the emerging economies such as Japan 20, 30, 40 years ago, and Korea or Taiwan or Singapore, all of those economies were high growth and emerged onto the scene with vigor in their particular decades. And it would be unheard of if we thought that China was going to be able to sustain an economy of its size without being able to produce big entrepreneur type companies that can compete globally. And certainly we're seeing the emergence of those over the last few years, and that is likely a trend we will continue to see grow. Of course, India has plenty of entrepreneurs and has many companies that can compete on a global basis in their particular niches. And that's also says something for the relative ability of a vibrant democracy to be able to produce high earning and globally aspiring individuals relative to an authoritarian type of system. For investors, we are looking to the economies that can do best over the long term, and with no uncertainty, the majority of people betting on this outcome are increasingly turning towards emerging Asia and commodity producing Latin America, because it is going to be almost a given that the center for global growth is going to be in the population centers of Asia going forward. And the companies that are going to do best are those that can harness the growth that will come from the consumer economies out there. Or they will be companies that can help to supply the raw materials that those economies need to grow. So the commodity complex, which went through a massive bear market until the beginning of this decade, where the people who, I think as Donald Cox has often said, the people who knew it best loved it least because they'd been disappointed the most. And we are starting from a relatively low investment type base, and certainly the last 5 years particularly have helped to increase the supply of some of these industrial commodities. But more is needed, particularly with the credit crisis having shut down some of the smaller projects and made a with the price falls made a number unviable. We are being offered the conditions once more where supply inelasticity meets rising demand will be a dominant theme over the course of this bull market. And let's not put any bones about this. We are in a new bull market scenario. Everything that has happened, particularly over the last 6 months, is consistent with bull market type activity. We've seen that stock markets bottomed, that a number of them formed bases, that they've broken upwards, that they've broken through their 200-day moving average, that the 200-day moving average has turned upwards, and that those which have had the larger reactions have found support in the region of their moving averages. That's all bull market type activity. When we look at the macro picture, the monetary accommodation that we have out there from so many central banks is potentially a problem longer term, but it is massively accommodative for risk assets to appreciate in value. And the yield curve is at highs that were last seen in 2003 and 1992, which were the bottoms of two important recessions. And we are back up to those levels now. And if banks can't make money in this type of environment, then there really is something wrong with them. So trading books are being leveraged up once more, and that money is flowing into risk assets. Stock markets have a universality about them in that they are attracting money from all over the world, and that cash that's been sitting on the sidelines since October or a year ago now is increasingly being tempted back into the market. Now, we've had a number of the leaders rallying remarkably impressively over the last 6 months, and they are becoming a little bit overextended relative to their underlying trading and their moving averages. However, they still remain consistent. The bull story that is evident is still intact, and the monetary accommodation is more than abundant. So that story is still in motion, and when we do start to get larger reactions, the chances are that they're either going to form ranging consolidations below their highs and unwind their overbought conditions that way, or they're going to pull back violently initially towards their moving averages before finding support and beginning to range upwards once more. When we do eventually get a larger reaction, it's likely to be a buying opportunity. The bull market that's currently underway probably has years left to run. And when we look at that yield curve chart, which is the spread between the 10 and the 2 year, there is probably a number of years before it becomes inverted again. And even when it does become inverted, that is a warning signal that we're coming up to the next recession. It's not a strict timing signal. There could be we could it could be up to a year early, even more than that. So we are in the early stages of a new bull market. The better buying opportunities are going to be following corrections. With that in mind, in stock markets, the best performing sectors have been those that are cash generative and have a confirmed global franchise. We're already seeing the results that investors are increasingly looking to which companies can benefit in the new environment where growth in a company's balance sheet is going to be dependent on how much exposure it has to the global economy, because growth in the USA and in Europe and the UK is likely to be low in the coming years. The leverage that has been built up over the last decade is going to take time to unwind. But the deflationary type environment, which so many feared a year ago, is unlikely to come to fruition. The massive monetary stimulus that has been pumped into the global economy, there is a large risk that it's going to seed the next inflationary problem. Now, that inflation isn't going to pop up in house prices, most likely, and it's probably not going to be in wages, but it could easily start to manifest itself in commodity prices. Oil finishes out the week a little bit weaker than it started out, but it's still in the region of $70, and there is a consistent progression of higher lows over the last 2 months. But longer term, it bottomed in January last year. It's almost doubled since its bottom. It looks to be consolidating below its recent highs with a view to pushing further upwards over the coming months and indeed years. And while we don't have the universality in the commodity complex that we do in stock markets, and the commodities do need to be taken on their individual merits, if we look at an index of commodities such as the CRB, it looks to be forming a first step above the base, and that is a reliable continuation pattern for further advances once that first step has been completed. When we look at the government bond markets, if we are in a new bull market and reactions are going to be limited, are likely to be limited to corrective phases prior to this bull being reaffirmed, then the need to hold such vast sums of treasuries when the supply is more than ample and where inflation could easily be a problem will be, I think, a much less compelling argument than it is today. When the 2 year bottomed, or sorry, when the 10 year bottomed at 2%, that really was a climactic ending. It was probably the bottom of a very long decline in yields since 1981. We don't know how long the base building formation is going to take, but it remains unlikely that we're going to see yields down there at 2% again, which would suggest that significant rallies in government bond prices are going to be better shorting opportunities than it would be to chase after them for on a long basis. And over the course of this bull market, the currencies of those countries that were most affected by the credit crisis are likely to have significant, well, they're going to have a motivation to have a weaker currency. In the current environment, and indeed the globalization environment, there's no country wants a strong currency, but some of them really are motivated to having a weak currency more than others. The USA is certainly among those. And with deficits left, right, and center that are likely to be rather more permanent than temporary, the preeminent position of the US dollar as a store of value is likely to be questioned. And It's been trending lower over the last few months, and it pulled down against a number of currencies across a broad swathe of the currency markets over this week. And it does look like we're going to see a weaker dollar going forward. We are, of course, there has been a lot of talk about the long-term implications of a weaker dollar and whether we're going to see a loss of confidence in the ability of the US to attract the types of investment it needs to fund its deficits. And those are all legitimate questions. But we don't see any evidence of the fact that that the US is unable to attract the kind of money it needs just yet. When we look at the foreign holdings of US assets, they continue to rise. They moved into negative territory at some point last year, but the last reading was really quite positive and obviously reflects the performance of the stock market. But that measure would have to turn downwards, move into negative territory, and stay there if we were going to have a major dollar crisis. And there doesn't appear to be that type of activity happening right now. What does appear to be the case is that the US is managing the currency lower. A lower currency would certainly help to boost the manufacturing base and help to get some of those unemployed people back to work. And I don't think, regardless of whether the strong dollar policy is being espoused by politicians or not, that anybody wants a strong dollar in the current environment. How long other countries are going to tolerate having their currency getting stronger against the dollar is another question entirely, and we could easily have an increased number of politicians starting to comment on the weakness of the dollar. But that doesn't deny the fact that the technical evidence is that there is a well-defined progression of lower highs that would need to be taken out for any dollar rally of substance to get underway. And in the absence of such a move, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I'm off to, I think David is looking forward to some rest and recuperation over the weekend, and I'm off to Frankfurt to visit some friends. But I will wish all the best to all of you.